We decided to be married as soon as possible. Edna's mother was older and not well, living in California. I didn't want my family to take a long, expensive trip to come. Very intimate friend of ours, Mr. and Mrs. Louis L. Strauss, S-T-R-A-U-S-S, offered to have a wedding take place in their home at 25 East 76th Street in New York City. Louis Strauss and Alice Strauss were very outstanding people. He was from Virginia, and during the war, he had taken a job with Herbert Hoover. Later on, he wrote a very interesting book about his life, about parts of his life. Which is called Men and Decisions. He did remarkably work for relief in Europe under Herbert Hoover. When he came back, he joined Kuhn Loeb and Company, leading investment bankers, and shortly became a partner. Alice Strauss was a very intelligent, very kind, very able lady whose father, Mr. Jerome J. Hanau, was one of the four senior partners of Kuhn Loeb & Company. I could talk a great deal about Louis Strauss, but I might simply mention that when World War II came, he was called to active duty by the Navy and became a rear admiral. Later on, he became chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission. His book tells the story of his life infinitely better than I could have. Full stop. They arranged for the wedding about 4 o'clock in their attractive house. The minister who married us was the Reverend Meinhold Simons, a Protestant minister of the Unitarian Church whom I had met in Cleveland. Stop. I might say in passing that mother had always written me to join the church. Stop. I investigated Protestant churches, and I was amazed to find that in the United States there must have been tens and tens of different denominations. Full stop, I could not understand it very easily, because in France, if you are a Protestant, you either belong to the Reformed Church or to the Lutheran Church. And fundamentally, it doesn't make very much difference. It usually depends in which part of France you live. But being from Eastern France, I was a Lutheran. You stop. One day in Cleveland, I was attracted by an electric sign on the church that said First M.E. Church. You stop. The idea of an electric sign on the church was news to me. and I came quickly to the unwarranted conclusion that since I had read that there were churches called Christian Scientists, probably the sign First ME Church meant mechanical engineer, which of course proved later on to be the wrong conclusion. So I didn't know what to do until I met the Reverend Meinhold Simons, and I was told that before being a minister he used to be in the steel business. So that sounded very interesting to me, and I joined the church, or I attended the church in Cleveland. Dr. Meinhold Simons was a very able, very nice person. Louis and Alice Strauss organized a little bit of a reception. Amongst those who attended the wedding were Pierre Cartier, of the famous firm of jewelers, Herbert Hoover Jr., son of the president, the senior and younger partners of Kuhnleub & Company. It was a very happy occasion. Partners of Kuhnleub gave us all our silverware, our glassware, and what the third thing that means? Silverware.
Linen.
And plates. Plates and glass. Plates, glasses, etc. We spent the evening and the night at the Hotel Weyland, Weyland, W-E-Y-L-I-N. And the next day, our first call as married couple were on Mr. and Mrs. Jesse Isidore Strauss, who was then president of Macy, and who later on became the U.S. ambassador to France. We knew them very well, and it was and we had a very happy tea at their home. I remember that walking on Park Avenue, I would train myself, and looking at imaginary people in the street, I would say, "People, please meet Mrs. Doyle." I was getting trained to introduce my wonderful wife. That night we went to Cleveland because I had committed myself to visiting some factories in Cleveland and making a speech. So our honeymoon was spent in Cleveland. I visited factories, made a speech, and didn't have much time with Edna. We stayed at the home of very fine friends of ours. I will supply the name later. I'm sorry I can't think of it now. Anyway, it was a pleasant time, but not exactly what people believe a honeymoon should be. We came back to Boston, and a few days later, I had a call from Kuhnleub & Company, telling me that the French line had asked them for financial help. And Kuhnleub wanted to know if I could go and spend 2 or 3 days in Paris and start looking over their situation. So Edna and I took the French line ship, I think it was the Ile-de-France, over Paris. I don't remember, but I could look it up. We had the French time provided us with a beautiful suite. We arrived in Le Havre, left our trunks there, took our suitcases to Paris, stayed with my family. I worked for all 3 or 4 days, then came back on the same ship. It was kind of unexpected but fun honeymoon. After all, we were together on a very beautiful ship and extremely well taken care of. After that, I went back to work at the business school. We'll stop. We'd taken an apartment in Cambridge, across the hotel, across the street from the hotel, name to be supplied later. The first Sunday we were there, everybody in Cambridge seemed to be calling on us. The reason was a bit obvious. I had never had any kind of social life. I practically never went out. I had to work evenings. And it appeared that those of my colleagues who did not know Edna wanted to see what she was like. And the wives of my colleagues who didn't know me and didn't know Edna were also anxious to see what we both looked like. Full stop, the same thing happened evenings. So after a few weeks we realized that there was no hope of leading any kind of life in Cambridge, and also that my evenings would all be wasted and I couldn't work. So we cancelled the lease, and Edna found a room at the Hotel Bellevue in Boston. We decided by that time that we didn't want to live in Cambridge because there would be too much social life and people calling on us without warning. So we had a nice little room, inexpensive, at the Bellevue. During that time, Edna started looking for an apartment. At the Bellevue, we did what we could not to spend much money. I remember that we studied the breakfast menus very carefully to see whether we could find a type of breakfast where we would only order for one and we'd have enough for two. Full stop, it became obvious that tea was preferable to coffee, because with coffee you'd usually get one cup, but with tea you'd get tea plus hot water, so we could have two cups, one for each. And of course we realized that with porridge or things of that type we could share. Stop. One day, Edna decided to buy a little heater so that we could heat some things. But unfortunately, once I put the heater on the glass top of a table and proceeded to break the glass top, so we didn't save much money on that one experiment. Paragraph. A short time later, Edna found a very attractive apartment at 5 Arlington Street. It was a 3 or 4 story house that had been transformed into apartments. We were on the second floor with a balcony overlooking the garden. The rooms, 3 of them, had high ceilings and were rather attractive. The middle room didn't have any windows. Living room was in front on the garden. The bedroom in the back and a little kitchen on the side. We were really very happy there. At that time, there were fewer automobiles than there are now on Arlington, and we were not annoyed by either their noise or their smell. I don't remember how long we were there, but probably a year, year and a half. Paragraph. Edna met a gentleman who told her that he owned an apartment house at 101 Chestnut Street, and he had a very nice duplex apartment on the top two floors, which was available. Edna told him that it was too expensive, and he said he very much wanted us to be there, and he would arrange for the rent to be reasonable. So we took it. We didn't have much furniture, but Edna had very good taste. As a matter of fact, I should say extraordinarily good taste. And she managed to pick up furniture here and there. We were very happy in that apartment. After a few years, the lady who had a duplex next door on the same two floors wanted to go and live elsewhere. She had a long time lease. She couldn't find anybody who wanted the apartment, so she sublet it to us at a very reasonable price. Edna told me that she would like to have it. It had more windows. As a matter of fact, it had windows on three sides. It had more space. It was a very beautiful apartment. And she said it wouldn't cost us anything to move because all she had to do is to push the furniture from across the entrance. So one morning I slept in one apartment, and the next morning when I came back from work, we slept in the other one. And we stayed there until the beginning of the war. Of course, we knew that eventually when we would have to pay the normal rent, we could not keep the apartment. So Edna cheerfully realized that she had the problem of finding a place to live. Later on, since I'm discussing places where we live, I might say it this time, but one day she took me to a place on Lime Street, to a house on Lime Street, which was to be auctioned off. We didn't know how much it would be auctioned for, and I told Edna that the best thing to do is to watch, and if she wanted to go to the auction sale. The rest of the story is that I then left for the army, and one day Edna called me and said that the house had been auctioned off. She had gone to the auction, and she got the house for about $8,000. Paragraph. That seemed to be a very extravagant price for me, for us to pay for a house, particularly since it was about my salary at Harvard. But Edna, who always had good correct feelings about things and about the future, told me that she felt it was a decidedly proper thing for us to do. Gustav, we had saved little money. We did not want to borrow money, so we used our savings to buy the house. Gustav, once more, Edna was very clever. She realized that she had to buy some electrical appliances. She had heard that there were two kinds of electric current, DC and AC, and somebody had told her that the electric current in our district should be changed from DC to AC, but they didn't know when. So she went to the electrical company, probably the Edison company, and told them that we bought a house. She didn't want to buy appliances that would become obsolete. Would they please put AC current on our street, at least for our house, as soon as possible? Strange enough, the electric company took her very seriously and gave her AC current. She didn't have to do too much to the house outside of fixing the kitchen. She was about the last one to get stainless steel, which was very fortunate, and made some other simple modifications. It has proved to be a very remarkable house and a very remarkable purchase. We have been most happy in that house, and I think our friends have enjoyed it very much. It's a convenient house. The rooms are large. We are on two floors. Our house has twice the width of other houses, of most of the houses on Lime Street. But of course, we have the advantage of only two floors when most of the houses have three or four. I left Boston, went to Washington, I think in June, before Pearl Harbor. I lived with friends in a hotel room at the Carlton. Pearl Harbor came, and it was obvious that the war would last. So I called Edna and I told her she'd better come to Washington, because that's where we would have to be for on terminate period. I remember that she arrived in Washington one morning on the night train from Boston, and she asked me where to look and for what. Well, I said, we are on 16th Street. It seems to be centrally located. I'll be working in a temporary building near the War College. It's a long way anyway. I think we'd better try to find a place not far from the Carlton, so that you'll be near the shopping district and it will be easier for you to go to whatever place you might have to go to. So she said, all right, I'll walk up 16th Street and see what I can find. When I got back to her that night, I said, what happened? She said, I walked up 16th Street, and at Scott Circle, which is not far from the Carlton, I saw a brand new apartment house. So I went in. It's not occupied yet, but it is available. But the apartments are frightfully small. But she said, on the way down in the elevator, I told the very nice black man who ran the elevator my problem. And I said, isn't there something else here, something like a penthouse maybe? He said, yes, madam, there is one penthouse, but we are not supposed to tell about it because the owner of the apartment wants to keep it for himself. Edna always believed that if you don't ask a question, you cannot get a yes answer. So she proceeded to go and see the owner of the apartment to live somewhere else. And by night, she had the penthouse. It was very reasonable, very attractive, good air, no noise, and it proved to be another very successful decision of Elna. We had two rooms and a nice kitchen and a bathroom. Glass windows, and as I've said before, good air, and a little concrete space with a fence around it where we could have flowers. The living room is where we lived. In the bedroom, we had two beds, which we still have in our guest room in Boston. They were along the wall on two sides, and in the daytime they looked like sofas. So when we invited people to dine with us, they would be in the living room when Edna did the cooking, then we would serve dinner on the bridge table in our bedroom. It worked very, very well. We stayed there during the whole war. I needed people to work for me in Washington. We always had a problem of finding where to live. It came about that Edna arranged for about 10 or 15 of them to live in the same house, apartment house, as we were in. And of course, that facilitated the travel problem because several of us could go in the same car. Can you stop a minute now? Working? About moving to Washington, I will always remember that one day Edna called me and she said that she would have dinner with me in our apartment in Washington 48 hours later. And I said, how will you do it? Well, she said, the army told me that we would pick up the furniture tomorrow night, but it would be delivered in Washington the next morning, and that I could settle down. Well, I didn't believe that at all. I didn't think the army could function that fast and that well. But it was one of the many cases where I underestimated the army and did not realize that the moving was done by the Quartermaster Corps and that I belonged to the Quartermaster Corps. And therefore, that made them more efficient. Anyway, she had told me we could have dinner at 6 o'clock. So I left the office early with one of my colleagues, Captain Cunning, and I said, look, my wonderful wife said I could have dinner at the apartment at 6 o'clock. There is no possible hope for it. But I said, I don't want to be cold, so I have to go by the house at 6 o'clock. So I went there quite certain that the furniture would not have arrived, that Edna wouldn't be there, and that the place would be empty. But I was very completely mistaken. The furniture had arrived that morning, Edna had arranged everything, had purchased what was necessary, and the dinner was ready at 6 o'clock. You know, our life in Washington was, of course, very interesting, but in many ways very difficult. When I came there, I was told to worry about putting motor transport in production. I was in a room with probably 50 or 60 people. And sometimes I could dictate more about it. Anyway, I have great many papers here in the basement about that phase of the world. And later on, the Quartermaster General told me to worry about conservation because we were short of everything. We had to get rid of the use of aluminum or brass or copper or metal of any kind. And it was easier said than done because plastics at that time were really quite unknown as far as properties are concerned. The knowledge of what they could do was very superficial. Furthermore, since I had to worry about personal equipment, people did not realize willingly